Hello and welcome to NJ Biz Conversations. I'm your host, Jeff Kanige. My guest today is Dr. Tara Chalakani. She is the CEO of Preferred Behavioral Health Group, a behavioral health services provider with several locations, mainly in the Shore region. Tara, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it. I'm interested in speaking to you about how businesses, employers, can support mental health needs of their staff in the in this post-COVID era, with COVID still sort of around and with all of the lingering problems that the pandemic created. But first, I'd like to hear a little bit about Preferred Behavioral Health. What distinguishes you from other service providers like that?
Thank you. So Preferred Behavioral Health Group has been around for a long time. So I think first and foremost, longevity is certainly something that separates us, as we've been in business for 45 years as Preferred Behavioral Health Group, but our prevention line has been in business for over 50 years in serving Monmouth County. That certainly sets us apart. And we also have staff that have been here for almost that long, which I think is very rare and unusual to find nowadays, especially with so much turnover and the great resignation. We still maintain a staff that have decades long tenure.
Okay, very good.
We provide mental health, substance use and prevention services across the lifespan in 14 counties in New Jersey. And every level of care except hospital level. So we really do it all. And that's the quickest way I can explain all the wonderful things we do here.
Okay. Well, it sounds like a full service organization. So that's you're the kind of person I'd want to talk about these issues. And that is the kinds of things that we saw during the pandemic. I heard you in another interview talk about the trauma that the pandemic sort of inflicted on people from the isolation and fear. I'm curious, just to take yourself back a couple of years to the height of the pandemic, what did that isolation and fear produce? What were some of the sort of main problems you were seeing people were bringing to you?
Well, first and foremost, anxiety has skyrocketed. Mm-hmm. And anyone that was struggling or dealing with anxiety prior, it just exacerbated it completely. But what we really saw was an increase of anxiety in younger children. Okay. And the trends in children's mental health care have not stopped. If anything, they've escalated to even a higher level, where we're seeing that 3 out of every 5 adolescent girls are depressed. So really unprecedented mental health needs in children primarily.
Okay. All right. And that's continued beyond the pandemic. Is that that's what I heard you saying? Yes.
Absolutely. Okay. And you know, not to get too into the weeds about trauma, but when we experience trauma, and trauma can be a set of circumstances, not just something abusive or really out of the ordinary that occurs. It can just be our circumstances, and our circumstances were very traumatic for a long time. We lived in fear. Right. We were isolated. That is not part of the human condition. Isolation is a symptom of depression. So we lived in a set of circumstances that impacted us, and it really impacts our brains from children to adults. It changes the way we feel about things. It changes our view of the world, and that happens in the workplace as well.
Okay. Now, I think just anecdotally from my own experience, just going around, walking around and driving around, mm-hmm. it looks like most New Jerseyans are done with the pandemic. They've moved on. It's something in the past. It was a terrible time, but we're trying to get back to normal now. We're going to bars and restaurants, we're going to movies, we're going to sporting events, we're doing all the things that we did before. But some of these lingering problems that you talked about, are they in the background now, or are you still seeing the same sorts of for lack of a better word, volume of folks coming to you and looking for help?
We cannot keep up with the volume. So volume has not changed. It continues to grow. And you mentioned that we have a big presence at the Jersey Shore, where right. our big footprint is Ocean and Monmouth County. Mm-hmm. There are still people, Jeffrey, that are displaced from Hurricane Sandy. Okay. 10 and a half years later. So just because we move on and life goes on, and from the exterior, it looks like life is back to normal, there are still so many people suffering from the impact of that. And so there were people who lost income, stopped, you know, really going out or even being social with family. And some of that really hasn't come back. Some people have still kind of separated themselves or they're still fearful, but obviously the majority, yes, we see they've moved on, they're over the pandemic, but the ripple effect continues for sure.
Okay. So let's talk, if we could talk a little bit specifically about businesses, about business owners, executives, what are the most important steps that those kinds of people can take if they care about their employees, their workers' mental health and their emotional well-being? What do they need to do? What are the most important things that someone watching this right now who may actually have good intentions about what they want for their employers, but just doesn't know how to start? What are the first things that you need to do?
So I think first and foremost, we really need to be cognizant that people's approach and their opinions about work-life balance have changed.
Okay.
So we really can't manage people the way that we did before the pandemic. So flexibility is key. If you can offer any accommodation or any modicum of flexibility, that is really critical because people got used to being at home and they like it.
Right.
And there were lots of people who really enjoyed that family time that they were missing, and it shined a spotlight. So whatever we can do to promote work-life balance and be flexible is a must. The second is we should never assume that someone is okay. And if we're noticing that maybe someone's not on their game, or they just don't seem like themselves, or they're not carrying themselves as they normally would, I think it's fine to have a humane conversation person to person and just ask someone, are you okay? Is everything okay? Because sometimes that little bit of attention or display of concern and compassion goes a long way. The next piece as employers, it's really critical to look into employee assistance programs.
Okay.
We do offer that as one of our service lines, mm-hmm. but just offering that service where I, as an employer, have a contract with a behavioral health provider, and I have 3 sessions or 6 sessions set aside that if you're having a hard time, you can go talk to this person and you don't have to pay for it and you don't have to use your insurance. I think that is really a nice thing, and many employers do it. Historically, it has been a lot of townships or county employees, but now more and more private employers are providing these employee assistance programs, and they're really critical. And I think it really sends a message that an employer cares about you and cares about your mental health, which really has been stigmatized for so long. And we need to put that aside because there is no difference between physical health and mental health.
Okay. And what role should the individual manager, supervisor, executive play in if they think someone is in trouble or may need help? Should that person refer, say, the employee to you, to your organization, or to something else? I mean, how involved should those individual managers be in the well-being of their employees?
Well, you know, I think that there's something to be said for that persistence of stigma, because if we're at work and we're saying, oh, my shoulder hurts or my back hurts, we're quick to refer someone to their great orthopedic surgeon or chiropractor or whomever. And we need to get more comfortable talking about mental health issues and saying, you know what, are you doing okay? And maybe someone says, I'm struggling, I'm having a hard time, or my child is struggling. Well, offer the name of, you know, now we know Preferred Behavioral Health Group is out there. You know, I saw this great organization on NJ Biz, look up their website. We need to be more comfortable talking about behavioral health the way we would talk about any other medical or health-related domain.
Okay. Well, you brought up one of the topics I was going to ask you about. I've talked to some of your peers about that stigma. There seems to be a feeling that the pandemic kind of drew that back a little bit, in part with the advent of telehealth, where you can sit in front of a computer. And I'm curious as to, and I bring this up because in our neighboring state of Pennsylvania, Senator John Fetterman recently checked him into a hospital to treat depression after having a stroke and being under the pressure of being a newly elected senator. I'm wondering, in general, are you still seeing the same levels of that reluctance to seek help and that feeling of being stigmatized? And B, does it help when someone as prominent as the senator from Pennsylvania takes that step, goes and seeks help, and then makes a point of saying to everyone, I needed help and I got it?
Mm-hmm. So to answer the first part of your question, I would like to believe that there is a reduction in stigma, especially with Prince Harry, you know, talking about his online platform company that he works for. And yes, there is more of a demand for sure post-pandemic, but it still persists, Jeffrey. But yes, people like Senator Fetterman who normalize and talk about, yes, I was depressed after a stroke, that helps. It always helps. You know, we need to be more open about, like I said, there is no disparity between mental health and physical health. We are one body with one brain, and there is no difference. And we need to be okay talking about these things, because one out of every two adults will be depressed at some point in their life. So go to a family gathering, a business meeting, a dinner party, probably half the room has or have suffered with some sort of mental health issue. So we need to be okay so that people can get the help that they need.
Okay.
I'll share with you. I attended a conference last week, and this statistic is just in my brain, and it's so astounding that 79% of antidepressants are prescribed by primary care physicians, not by psychiatrists or psychiatric nurse practitioners. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we wouldn't go to our primary care provider to have them birth our babies. Mm-hmm. Right? We go to specialists, and we need to get more comfortable seeing specialists. We are the experts in behavioral health, and that's who we should be relying on to get us through these difficult times.
Okay. Well, you mentioned prescriptions, and I'm curious, back again in the early days of the pandemic, we heard a lot about a meteoric rise in substance abuse. I'm wondering, did you see the same thing, number one? And number two, has that persisted now that the pandemic seems to have been ebbing? Are you still seeing the levels of substance abuse and severity of the problem that you were seeing a couple of years ago?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Okay.
I mean, substance use is a pervasive issue regardless, especially we're here in Monmouth and Ocean counties where there's still a very chronic opioid epidemic. But yes, and we definitely saw increases in substance use. We definitely saw substance use increase more in women and the elderly. And that is something that persists. So those are kind of populations that maybe we never thought of before as being prime candidates for needing substance use treatment. But yes, absolutely. I mean, again, the pandemic was just a catastrophic human event. It was traumatic. It was something that touched everyone. It wasn't like, oh, like Hurricane Sandy, like, oh, you poor people at the shore. This was global.
Right.
It impacted everyone. So none of us came out of this untouched by it. And some were touched more, some were touched less. So yes, absolutely. We saw it and we're still seeing it.
Okay. Now you mentioned flexibility on the part of employers, and mm-hmm. from my conversations with business owners and executives, most of them seem to have internalized that. Not all of them, but most of them seem to believe that the future is some sort of hybrid arrangement where it's in the office part of the time and at home part of the time. And I'm wondering if that in itself creates some difficulties for people. Yes, there, as you mentioned, there are people who certainly like to be at home and like to spend time with their families. But I'm also wondering if, for example, the transition time that someone might have had from the time of leaving an office to getting home, whether it's an hour on a train or in a car or something like that, where they can listen to something that they're interested in. It doesn't necessarily have to be even that. I'm just curious as to whether you're seeing any difficulties from the hybrid arrangement, where it's maybe you don't know where you're going to be on any given day. I mean, does that create some problems?
It does. And I think it's person specific. I think that there are some people that are really self-motivated and structured, and they really work well without direction, and they know, you know, how to navigate this new flexibility or a looser work landscape. And then there are others who don't. And I think that we as employers need to be really good at knowing our team and being able to know what their strengths are and what their limitations are, and really tap into that and co-create a work environment where we all thrive and where we all prosper. So it's really not a one size fits all. And I mean, we certainly see that here. We have 70 programs, we're in 14 counties, you know, all of our programs are quite different. Mm-hmm. Some are 24/7, some have a more traditional work schedule, some are office-based, some are out in the community. So, here we have to really go on a case-by-case basis. And I would suggest that any employer that can do that should.
Okay. And that requirement, that extra sort of responsibility on managers and supervisors, I imagine takes its toll as well. And they shouldn't be ignoring their mental health along with this, even though they're expected to sort of make sure that the business keeps running, even in the face of all these things. They should pay attention to what they are feeling.
Absolutely. And you had asked earlier, what sets us apart from other behavioral health organizations? Mm-hmm. We are a trauma-informed organization, which means that our entire organization is trained on trauma, the impact. We know that 90% of people with a mental health diagnosis have experienced trauma. So from our front desk to billing, finance, they're all trained in what that means. Once a year, we have an annual training for every single person in a leadership role, where we are reminding them to, take care of themselves, to check in on themselves, because if they don't take care of them, they're not going to be able to take care of their team. So we are really mindful of that, and educating our supervisors, encouraging their self-care, encouraging their time off, because our mantra here is you can't pour from an empty cup. So we can't have leaders being tapped out, right? On E, so to speak, of their gas tank. So we're very mindful of that here.
Okay. All right. And finally, before I let you go, I'd like you to put your CEO hat on and tell me a little bit more about the business. What are you looking for in 2023? What are your priorities? What are the biggest challenges? What are you anticipating going forward here for the business itself?
Thank you for asking that. So first and foremost, my first order of business as the CEO of Preferred Behavioral Health Group is really to get as many people out there in New Jersey knowing that we're here, we can help you, and understanding that we're one of the largest behavioral health organizations and we're here to help. So that is something that is very, very important. Second would be growth, because like I said, we are in 14 counties. Ocean and Monmouth being our biggest footprint, but we have singular programs in the other outlying counties, and we would really like to expand those services because people need them desperately. And then we are constantly looking to hire talent. The needs and the demand are extraordinary.
Right.
So I would encourage anybody watching this broadcast, or if you know anybody that we are hiring, we're a great place to work. And like I said, you will never be without a job because the demand is out there.
Okay. So you've experienced the same sort of thing I've heard over and over again.
Absolutely. I don't think there is an industry that is immune to this.
Yes.
And our circumstances are a little different, because I think what we've felt in behavioral health is that a lot of employees went out on their own and became entrepreneurs and hung a virtual shingle and, started businesses of their own. So our circumstances are the same in that we felt the shift and we have a lot of vacancies, but probably for different reasons.
Okay. Well, I hope you can you get what you need and find the people that you need. Dr. Tara Chalakani, the CEO of Preferred Behavioral Health Group, thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate you taking the time. And I do hope you'll come back and we'll check in with you to see how things are going at some point.
I would love to. Thank you.
Thank you again. And thank you all for watching. Until next time, stay safe, everyone.